Hey there, do you dream of escaping into a book? Maybe your escape includes a cozy cabin in the mountains or a magical town along the coast. Either way, you're in the right place. Welcome to Literary Escapes with me, Becky. This year on the podcast, we're exploring the United States. So every week I'm going to bring you a new book set in a different state. So let's see where we're going today.
Okay. Carolyn Haynes, thank you so much for joining us today.
I'm happy to be here.
It has been a fun month reading about the Mississippi Delta. I have never, one of the few states I have not been to. And you're from Mississippi, right?
I'm from the southeast corner, a little town called Loosedale. My first trip to the Delta, I actually went as a journalist into the state prison undercover.
Oh, okay.
those women in prison took one look at me and they knew I was not what I pretended to be.
Oh no.
No, I was not very good at pretending to be a little criminal. Although I do have criminal impulses.
Probably makes you a better writer. That's so funny. So you started as a journalist, right?
Did.
And you did that for several years, right?
For about a decade.
Okay.
I ran a statewide bureau in my hometown, and then I worked for the Huntsville Times and, you know, different places.
Okay.
Just different dailies around the South.
Okay. And so how did you go from that to being a novelist?
I was writing short fiction. I started writing short stories in college. I just loved short stories, and mm-hmm. I never thought to publish. But I was at a cocktail party, and the head of the journalism department at Ole Miss, now I went to Southern. Not Ole Miss. But he was super, super nice. And he came up and he said, so-and-so says you write short stories. And I said, oh, I do. I love it. I just love writing short stories. And he said, have you published? And I said, no, I wouldn't even know how to go about it. I just write for myself.
Yeah.
And he said, do you have an agent? I mean, this is like 1982 or three. And I was 24 or 5. What's an agent?
Yeah, exactly. And if you're writing for yourself, why would you ever even consider that? Yeah.
Right. And he said, well, Sissy says you're pretty good. And I said, well, I don't know. And he wrote down his agent's name and handed it to me. And he said, why don't you give Julie a try?
Huh.
And I got an agent. And she said, you can write a novel. You can't make any money selling short stories. You have to write a novel. And I looked at her. I mean, I was talking to her on the phone, and I said, nobody can write 500 pages. Nobody. Journalism, it's like 3 pages max.
Double. And that's a lot, yeah.
Yeah, that's a big story.
Yeah.
That's a lot of type. So
I never
thought I could do it.
And so what was your first story?
My first short story?
Well, the first published one, I guess.
Let's see. I published a couple of short stories in some small magazines. And I wrote a book. It wasn't published. It was a book about euthanasia. A delightfully cheerful topic.
Right.
And so it didn't sell. And I was in a bookstore, and there was this lady, and she had a stack of books like this big. And I was looking at them, and I said, you know, do you mind if I ask you some questions? And why are you buying this? Why do you like this? Why do you like that? And that kind of stuff. And she was really helpful.
Oh, that's interesting.
She was mostly buying contemporary romance.
Okay.
And so I grew up in Loosedale. There was no bookstore, but we had a spinning book rack at the hospital pharmacy where I was a clerk.
Oh.
So the pharmacist told me that I could read any book on the rack and I didn't have to pay for it if I didn't break the spine.
Okay.
I could stand at the register and read.
But that's a heck of a deal.
As long as I was available to wait on people when they came.
Right.
This was a wild, wild drugstore. It was three bachelor pharmacists owned it. And they were the biggest practical jokers in town. They did terrible things to me, like put packets of birth control pills in my purse. And I would go home and throw my purse on the kitchen table and birth control pills would fly out. And my mother would be like, what?
Oh, my.
I was like 15.
And got conversations going, huh?
I would stand at that register and I'd start at the top of the rack, which were your sweet contemporary romances. Then the gothics. Then it would go down to, you know, like mysteries.
Okay.
And close to the very bottom was literary fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And then below that was men's adventure. And in a month's time, I could read the whole rack.
Oh, how fun.
So
that's cool.
I read everything. And there was nobody to tell me, this is quality, this is not quality, this is good writing, this is bad writing.
Right.
Formed my own opinions. And when I interviewed this woman in the bookstore and she was writing contemporary romance, I thought, well, I hadn't read that in a long time. Let me buy some and, you know, and see what's going on. Cause I need to sell a book, man. I'm not making but $9,000 a year here. We're going to starve to death fast. I wrote three.
Okay.
Them ever sold contemporary romances. The focus, I could not keep the focus.
Okay.
On the relationship. I kept wanting to bring in the maid or the, you know, or the cowboy or the whoever. And I didn't know how to focus that intense a story.
Yeah.
But
okay.
I got one of my absolutely most favorite rejections from one of the books. It was a book called Love's Tempo about a girl, you know, I'm horse crazy, about a girl who had a horse that was a champion. And, you know, as soon as the foals started winning, she'd be able to pay off her farm. And of course, the hero is the banker.
Who's oh, of course.
I thought I had it set up pretty good, you know, that I had a good conflict, a good reason why,
yeah.
You know, that kind of stuff. But the rejection said, dear Miss Haynes, we love your writing. We love your characters. We love the setting. But
that whole romance thing, girl.
It would appear the heroine cares more for her horse than the hero. Now,
that could be an issue.
Now, had I known then what I know now, I could have rewritten that into a young adult.
Okay.
You know, a young adult about horses, not about necessarily romance. I would have had a completely different career if I'd had any gumption.
Isn't that interesting, huh? So then you went into mystery writing. How did that happen?
Well, I've always been quite excited by killing people off in books. I just love it. And so when Harlequin started doing the intrigues,
okay,
because, you know, before there was not a line that had mystery in it.
Okay.
Harlequin came out with the intrigues and Silhouette had special edition or something like that.
Yeah.
It was their own little line with that. And I met one of the Harlequin editors at a luncheon.
Cool.
And we talked and she liked me. She took a liking to me. And she spent endless hours helping me understand what a scene was, how to balance, you know, narrative summary with immediate scene.
Nice.
All the things about writing. Because I don't only been a reader
And well, and a journalist is very different than a novelist.
Yeah.
You're trying to get different points across. So, yeah.
And she was just incredibly kind to me. And I have no idea why. But
love that.
I stuck with it and she bought my first book.
That is so cool. And so you were telling me earlier that you've written 80 books, which I think is just phenomenal. And so Them Bones, where does that fall in your numbers?
I did about 37 Harlequin Intrigues. I used the pseudonym Caroline Burns.
Okay.
And within that series, I had my own series of Familiar, the Black Cat Detective.
Yeah, okay.
And so Them Bones, I did a book called Summer of the Redeemers. It's Southern, I would call it Southern Gothic. It's a coming of age story.
Okay.
I'm really proud of that book. And I got a 2-book contract with Dutton for Summer of the Redeemers and Touched, which is also a book I'm really quite partial to. And I had finished that contract and I didn't know what to write next because, you know, I just sat down and wrote Summer of the Redeemers. It was just a book that, you know, it's a coming of age story. It's set in my world.
Yeah.
And so I had been talking to my agent and she said, so what are you working on? And I'm like, digging my grave with my teeth, you know, not exactly helpful.
Right, right.
She said, well, you know, when you come up with something, let me know. And I was sitting here looking out the window at my horses in the pasture thinking, come up with an idea. You need to sell a book. Come on, come on.
Come on, girl.
And I just heard Sarah Booth and Jitty talking. And I just started writing. I didn't know who they were. I didn't know anything about their world. But they were so distinct in their voices.
Yeah.
I was able to, you know, write and figure out who they were and what they were doing.
That's so fun. And Sarah Booth kind of falling into becoming a detective was such a funny way of her figuring herself out, I guess.
Well, coming from the romantic world, you know, your heroine could never have stolen a dog.
Exactly. Because,
truthfully, you know, the characters are somewhat noble. They may make mistakes. They may do things that I think there's a lot more latitude now than there was back around 1984 or 5.
Right.
But it was really interesting. And so I wrote the book and I sent it to my agent and she said, oh yeah, I think I can sell this. Well, we ended up, it sold at auction. There were 7 publishers bidding on
Wow.
And it sold at auction to Random House for a 3-book deal. And from there, it's just been.
And so how many are in that series now? Because there's a bunch of them.
I think I'm just finishing either the 29th or the 30th.
Wow.
Yeah.
Has it been fun to be part of that world for so long?
It's their family to me now. They really are. Yeah. I spend more time with them than just about anybody else.
Yeah. And you were telling me earlier that Jitty may or may not be a ghost.
Well, I think you can make your own decision about that. She could be Sarah Booth's subconscious.
Who dresses crazy. I like her style.
In Them Bones, this is so mean. I have a dear friend. We've known each other since we were 5. And Debbie she is a fashionista. She has so many pairs of shoes. When Katrina came through, she fled town. And I can't leave because of all the animals. I just have to stay.
Yeah.
So she said, you know, if you get a chance, drive by the house and check on it and see if it's still standing. So
yeah.
I told her, I said, Debbie, your house is fine, but all of your shoes are scattered up and down the road and on the rooftops. I thought before I could tell her it was a joke, I thought she was going to have a stroke. But every outfit that Jenny wears in that book, Debbie wore in college. So,
oh, I love it. Okay. That is so funny.
Velveteen hot pants.
Ooh, gotta love that, huh?
The 70s. We were styling.
You know it, man. You know it. That's my sister and I. We were elementary school in the 70s, and we have this one picture of us, and we have it's bell bottoms, very bright colors, fluorescent type colors, pants. And we were, I mean, you can tell by our faces, we were looking good.
Don't you love it?
I know. The confidence of wearing these things is just really funny. I love it. So do you have any other series that you're thinking, or do you already do other series at the same time, or?
Well, I have a series that I really love writing, but I haven't had a chance to work on it for a while. It's called Pluto's Snitch, and it's set in the 1920s, and it's about a woman who can see and communicate with the dead.
Okay.
And she and her partner solve mysteries that have a paranormal element to them. So there are four books in that series. And I have an idea for when I really want to write, but I just, you know, I have contracts for Sarah Booth, and that I need to honor those.
Right, right.
And I have a friend who just moved on to my property, and she's a writer. She has a magazine, and y'all might want to look at it. It is wellreadmagazine.com.
Okay.
It's a literary magazine, and we're writing a book together.
Oh, fun.
It's called Squatters, and it's about these two writers who move on a farm together, and they're the best of friends from childhood until they hire a farmhand, and then they both want him. It becomes quite a little competition, but it's a comedy, so
that sounds like fun.
Yeah, and we're having a really good time writing it.
I would imagine. That's fun.
Yeah.
So the Sweet Redeemer, you were saying that was one book that you were very proud of.
Summer of the Redeemer.
Oh, Summer of the Redeemer. Okay. Mm-hmm. What is that story about?
It's about a young girl. I'm trying to think, 1964, I think, 63 or 64, Mississippi rural. She has a best friend, and the book opens when her best friend's baby sister disappears. And there are two things that have happened on the road, Calioka Road, where they live. This professional horsewoman has moved onto the road with a stable of horses. And a church has moved down to the end of the road. The church is called Blood of the Redeemers.
Okay.
And it's rumored that they steal babies. So Becca, the young protagonist, decides that she's going to find this baby. She knows it's still on the road. She believes it's still on the road.
Wow. That's a tough topic, kind of.
It is. It is.
Yeah. Interesting. So how is it writing like these harder topics versus like a Sarah Booth book?
Well, Sarah Booth has some pretty loaded topics in some of the books. Not so much them bones, but, you know, I'm a journalist.
Yeah.
I'm going to get into some controversial stuff. So,
I like that.
Yeah. So there are some issues in those books also. It's a funny thing because I love writing the comedy, but if I read, I prefer to read dark.
Interesting. Weird? Interesting.
That,
yeah.
That's just weird to me.
Does your mind tend to run dark when you're writing sometimes?
I'm a pretty dark person.
Yeah.
I laugh a lot too.
That's interesting. I like that. Have you written any really dark books?
I have, and I love this book. It's called The Darkling.
Okay. I remember seeing that on your website. Yeah.
I have scared the snot out of people with that book. Really, truly, I've had people get mad at me.
Wow.
You're creepy. You're scared. But it's not bloody. It's not gory. It is creepy.
Okay.
It's about a family that moves to Code Inn, which is a little community on the Gulf.
Okay.
He's an architect. He's redoing an old hotel. And truthfully, back in the 40s, Code Inn was a place where a lot of Hollywood movie stars came to play because
wow.
it was isolated. And, you know, they could relax and do whatever and
do
not,
their thing without a lot of eyes on them.
Yeah. Yeah. On the down low.
Yeah.
And so it's about this family. They adopt a girl and hire a tutor. And the tutor begins to see children in the woods that are the identical replica of the Henderson children. But the minute she sees one of the replicas, then she knows that child is going to be murdered.
Oh, no.
And it is about the power of a desperate person to manifest a creature desperate for love.
Wow.
So it's based on a little known fact about the brown-headed cowbird. The cowbird lays its egg in another bird's nest, usually a warbler.
Okay.
So the warbler mom hatches them out, and the cowbird's big. It's bigger than the other birds.
Yeah.
It has a tick. If it's touched on the back, it pushes until it pushes all the other little birds out of the nest. And it's the only one left.
Wow. Interesting way to reinterpret the story, huh?
And you say to yourself, not going to spend the night at her place.
Yeah, there you are. So Sarah Booth is still going strong.
Mm-hmm.
And in the first book, there's maybe a hint of romance in there. Although not really. I mean, there's two different people, one that she is obsessed with, maybe.
Yeah.
And then one that is very much a gentleman and very much would probably solve a lot of her problems, but she's not in the least bit attracted to him necessarily. And then in the end, neither one of them comes through. And so do you continue with interests throughout the series?
Yeah, she has different love interests, and it's complicated because I've been writing these books now for 26 or 7 years, and Sarah Booth is only aged like 18 months.
I ought to be like that.
I had brown hair when I started writing this book. It's insane.
So she hasn't grown a ton maybe over the books. I don't know. What do you, has she?
She's had quite a few boyfriends. I was doing a book signing one time, and this woman waited in line to tell me this. And I was so like, okay. She waited in a long line to get up to me and look at me and say, I hope you know Sarah Booth is just a slut. Thank you very much.
There you have it. That's so funny.
It had not occurred to me, but I guess if you were reading the book back to back to back, it
right.
would occur that she was quite, you know.
Quite active.
Yes. Yes.
But when you read them once a year.
Yeah, or when you're working on one for a whole year, it doesn't
Yeah.
seem like she's getting all that much action.
That's so funny. So, who are your favorite characters that you've created?
Well, let's see. Gosh, that's tough. I love the Zinnia characters. I mean, they're like my friends and family now. I've had
Yeah.
so much time with them. I'm really in touch. There is the story is narrated by a 16-year-old mail order bride. It's set in 1926, so it's back in time. And Maddie is a character I'm very proud of because her story, she tells the story of Johanna and Duncan, this kind of woman who refuses to be cowed by the town. She's going to drink, she's going to listen to opera, she's going to dance. And her little girl, Duncan, is dancing and is struck by lightning, but it
Ooh.
doesn't kill her, but it gives her the prophetic ability. But she can only predict drownings. And the
Oh.
people in the town think she's been touched by Satan, so hence the title Touched.
Wow.
So I'm really proud of those characters. And you always love the book that you're working on.
Right. And so have you ever self-published any of your books, or have they?
I have.
Okay.
When I was doing the Pluto Snitch, I sold the first two to Thomas and Mercer, which is Amazon's
Oh,
thriller
okay.
publishing
Yeah.
arm. And the sales were not good. They really were terrible. It's a gothic, a southern, it's a historical gothic paranormal mystery. And I don't know what happened because
Okay.
I love reading those, but they are more often British.
So are all of your books set in Mississippi?
No, some are set in Alabama.
Okay.
I cross a state line on occasion. Louisiana, I have a book called Fever Moon that's set in Louisiana in 1944.
Okay.
I will tell you one bad story about me. I fell deeply under the sway of James Lee Burke. I've read a book of his, Black Cherry Blues. Have you ever read him?
I have not.
Please read this book.
James Lee Burke.
James Lee Burke, Burke. He is he's just pro he, I think he's probably the best working writer today, and he's in his 80s.
Okay.
So I just decided I was going to Louisiana for a, research trip, and I was gonna eat Cajun food, learn the Cajun dance, and just have a very, very good time in a part of the world that was so different from the very, very Protestant little town I grew up in, where
Yeah.
nobody drank, nobody, it was dry. You
Yeah.
couldn't legally.
Yeah.
So I convinced one of my childhood friends to go with me, and we get over there, and we're staying at a bed and breakfast, and the woman who ran it was she was 1956 Mardi Gras Queen of New Orleans.
Oh
So
my.
she knew where to send us, and she sends us to Moulots for dinner, and we get to watch people dance, and then she sent us to this bar in Brobridge. It was like a VFW hall.
Okay.
So we were in our 30s and everybody else was in their 70s. We walked in the door, but they danced. All of them danced. We didn't sit down. We got invited to dance, and they were so sweet and kind. And we danced mostly with this table full of guys. And they had a woman with them, but she had her leg propped up. Couldn't understand anything they said because, they had that dialect. And I didn't
That's
care. But I thought this one man told me that she was his wife and she had hurt her leg and she liked to watch the dancing and she didn't care if they danced with us. So
okay.
danced and danced and danced. 2 o'clock in the morning, we finally go home. And the next night, we ran into some of the people from we met that night. And this woman comes up, she goes, "Oh, you girls are so kind." And anytime anybody uses the kind word, it's like the radar goes up.
Uh-oh.
"No, we're not really kind, but why would you think we are?" She said, "You don't know. That table full of men you danced with all night, they were out on weekend pass from the mental institution." So I said, "Do you know where they are tonight?"
That's so funny. Oh my gosh.
We had a blast.
I bet. That's so funny.
Who else would have the patience, you know?
That's so funny. Well, makes for a really good story, and you had a good night dancing. So,
oh, we had a great time.
That's really funny. So, other than your collaboration that you're doing, what are you working on right now?
I've got 5,000 words to go on my Christmas Bones book, the May book. I usually have a book come out in May, and every other year I have a Christmas book.
Okay.
So the May book is called Lights, Camera, Bones, and it's set in Greenville, Mississippi, on the river.
Okay.
And it's about a bull shark that ends up in the river.
Oh.
While they're filming a movie. So
my goodness.
They keep disappearing. And does the shark have them? Or is it some other plot afoot? And so that one's in the bag. It's done. The edits are done. It's ready to go.
Nice.
And so the Christmas book is called Blue Christmas Bones. And a very true fact, the little town of Tupelo, Mississippi, has an annual Elvis impersonator contest.
It's That's where Elvis is from, right?
Yeah, it's his hometown. So I just took the impersonator contest. It's always held in June.
Okay.
And I to Christmas time for the purposes of my story.
Sure.
And so Sarah Booth and them take their little annual Christmas jaunt there, and they're going to perform as Elvis impersonators.
Well, that sounds like a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That sounds like a lot
of
fun.
I love Elvis, so I was real happy to do this.
Oh, that's got to be fun to be in his world for a little bit. And so did you go to Tupelo?
I did not get to go.
Okay.
I was going to go in June, and I can't remember what came up. But somebody died. It was a crisis of some kind. I didn't go.
That's too bad.
Yeah.
You'll have to go next year.
Yeah, I will. I will. And I have friends who live in Tupelo, so, you know, they had good footage for me.
Nice. Nice. And so how many people tend to participate in the contest?
Oh, it is, you know, it's kind of a big deal. They have everything from children to females to, you know, some of the people from the Las Vegas Circle show up.
Nice. Okay. And so do they have like different eras of Elvis, I guess? Like not young certain. Elvis, old Elvis?
Yeah. 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 They do. You know, some of them can really sing, which shocks
That's a bonus. Yeah. And they have to be able to move, of course. So, yeah.
Yep.
That's funny. So when you read, you said that you like to read darker type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What are you reading right now?
Mexican Gothic.
Okay. Okay. I feel like we may have read that one at some point before I started this book club.
Well, I've just started it. My friend and co-writer Mandy had read it, and she left the book up here for me. I don't read as much as I used to because I'm always writing. And truthfully, this is terrible. TV is easier, and I watch a lot of news, which I shouldn't do because it just depresses.
That's a tricky one these days.
Yeah.
Do you like to hang out on social media and interact with your readers, or?
I really do. I really do.
And so where do you tend to spend your time?
On Facebook. I have an assistant who does Instagram and Twitter.
Yeah.
I don't want that Twitter.
Twitter does not make any sense to me.
I would get sucked into it, and then I'd have fights with people about politics and all kind of stuff. Just be a huge waste of my time.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm happy to let Priya, and she's so good at it.
Some people are definitely made for that kind of thing, and I am not one of them either. So, no. Yeah.
She doesn't get drawn into any of the drama.
That's helpful.
She knows what her job is. She does. She invented her job, so she knows what it is.
She's good at it, yeah.
And
I
so
love
she
those people.
All that, and I don't have to, but I enjoy Facebook, you know.
I like Facebook too, yeah. So do you have a group in there, or just your Facebook page, or how do readers find you on there?
Yeah, I have an author page, Carolyn Haynes, and then I have my page.
Okay.
Which, you know, I'll post a little more stuff on.
Sure.
Than the author page. I try to be professional. It's hard. I'm not that person.
Hard to be professional. Yeah. That's so funny. So we can find you on Facebook.
Sure.
And
well, I have a newsletter.
I was just going to ask that. Perfect. Yep. Okay.
My website is carolynhaynes.com. And if you do a /subscribe, it'll take you right to sign up for the newsletter. They come out once a month. They're not,
nice.
You know, not real annoying. It's not like I'm going to browbeat you. also, I write terrible things about my friends in my newsletter. So it's worth the gossip factor.
There you go. There you go. Very cool.
Well, when I quit writing books, I'm going to use the newsletter as a means of blackmail opportunity. Pay me and I won't write about you.
Exactly. There you go. I would imagine growing up in the South, you have a plethora of character options that you have seen, heard about, been friends with.
Working in the newspaper business, it put me in a lot of interesting places that otherwise I wouldn't have experienced.
What was the craziest story you covered?
I covered an armed robbery on horseback. My mother had let me out at the barn. I had a car, but she was using my car. And so she dropped me at the barn. And then she calls me. There's a robbery at so-and-so store. It was about 2 miles down the road. And I said, I don't have a car. She said, do you have your camera? And I said, yeah, I have the camera. She said, well, ride the damn horse. What's wrong with you? You
know? That is funny.
She was a journalist also.
Anything for the story.
That's it. Story always.
That's so funny. So did you get the pictures? And
Yeah. I mean, he was gone.
Okay.
Gone, but I interviewed him and took some pictures, and it was all fine.
That's so funny.
You think back in that day and age, we had a fax machine. We'd have to write up the stories and roll them on that thing and plug your phone into it. And, you know,
that's so funny.
Put the film on the bus to the paper so they could develop it that night.
Times have changed, haven't they? My goodness. Yeah. Well, Carolyn, thank you so much for joining us today. This has been a fun conversation, and I feel like I need to go through and read the whole series now. I don't know where I'm going to find the time, but.
Read The Darkling and let me know if it scares you.
Ooh, I don't like scary books.
Oh, come on. Come on.
You know what? I'm going to have my husband read it because he loves Stephen King.
Yeah.
So okay. I'll recommend it to him because otherwise.
Okay.
That sounds good. He will probably enjoy that.
It was very nice to meet y'all.
Yeah. Have a great rest of your day, and I will see you ladies later. Okay.
If I can do anything for y'all, let me know.
Sounds good. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining me today. If you'd like to be part of the Read Across the U.S. Book Club, I'd love to have you join us. There is a link in the show notes. So just head down there and click, and we will welcome you in. So see you in the book club, I hope. Have a great day, and we'll see you next week with a new episode.